I'm really sorry I'm late. So
that's quite a rate.
No. We're rocking.
We all just
it's like a technical thing, but I just want you to get this because you understand the mitzvah of reading the Megillah a little bit better. I just started understanding this today a little bit better. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, read your words. Mehechem kore adam is a Megillah. It is an obligation to read the Megillah on Purim. And at night we read it during the day. We repeat it twice. Read the Megillah on Purim. How much of the Megillah do you have to read in order to have fulfilled the mitzvah of reading the Megillah? You have to read the whole thing? Let's say you miss a part. Let's say you go out. Right? How much of the Megillah do you have to read? Somebody told me that in the olden days it was very hard to get, you know, when things were harder to get, it was hard to get a full Megillah.
Oh, wow.
A whole Megillah, like a luxury issue. So you just get like, would have pieces. So, like the time of the Gemara, it was like a big deal to have a whole Megillah.
Wow.
So how much of the Megillah you have to read? So listen to this. Remeyer says, Kula, you have to read the whole thing.
Wow.
Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you don't have to read the whole thing. You only have to read from Ish Yehudi on. So here's Ish Yehudi.
Oh, wow.
This is all the way. In other words, if you have to, I guess, I don't know if it's preferable to read everything, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's very interesting because Yehuda comes from Yehudi, so he was partial to that idea. But he says the main part of the Megillah starts here, chapter 2. On the bottom, and so the whole Megillah, we know the whole Megillah, the whole story that was about the dinner, and but according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't have to read all that about the big meal and about the festival and 100. So it's very interesting because we were talking yesterday about why did. Do you remember this? Let me just review this with you in your mind. What's going on here? Another few doors. we were talking yesterday about the fact why did Ahasuerus do this odd thing of making a feast which lasted 180 days? 127 days.
Huh?
I thought it was
150
days.
I'm sorry, 180 days. Shmonim 180 days. 180-day feast. Such a strange idea of a 180-day feast. Then afterwards, he made another feast. After he married Esther, he made a second feast, which lasted, I believe, 80 days. Okay, now we understand maybe a little bit, but why did he make this feast? Remember, we talked about this yesterday. So the answer is because he wanted to show everybody, he wanted to show the whole world who he was and that he was the king. And this was an act of benevolence that he did where he invited not everybody to come to one. Like, we think about this thing as like one big wedding. But that's not what it was. It was like in and out. It was more like a shalom zafer. It was in and out because you had millions of people living in the Persian Empire. And he invited even people from the outskirts to the Persian Empire. Each one had their time and they can come in and they could eat. It was like 24/7 serving.
Oh,
and you'd come in and you would show them your passport and it would say what your age was, let's say. And then they would order wine according to your age. That was what the Gemara says. If you were 93, they gave you 93-year-old wine. If you were 36, they gave you 36-year-old wine. If you kept kosher, they gave you kosher. If you wanted certain kinds of, you know, you only eat Iraqi food, they give you Iraqi food. So everything was, that's kedus. Everything was kedus. Everything they wanted, the answer was that Ahasuerus was the ultimate people pleaser.
Right.
And this was the way he was able to please everybody by giving them exactly what they wanted. Usually you don't do that. Usually you go to the feast of the king. You don't get what you want. You get what he thinks is the right thing for you to do. No, it was a way of Ahasuerus showing everybody that this is your place. You know, accept me as a leader, and this is your rulership. Okay, so that's a very interesting thing. Is it part of the Purim story? So Remeyer says, yes, you have to start with that part of the story. Rav Yehuda says, no, you only have to start with the part about Mordechai and Haman. The main thing is not, you know, this is just like a historical backdrop, but it's not part of the real story. You just start with, there was a Jewish man in Shushan Abira, and his name was Mordechai ben Yori ben Shimi ben Kishi Shemini. Okay, we start talking about the story of Mordechai and Esther. But we don't need to tell the story about Ahasuerus and what kind of a wimp he was and a people pleaser he was. So what's the reason why Remeyer says, let's just think for a second. Why would Remeyer say that you should start from the beginning? Why do you have to start from the beginning? Because this people pleaser thing was part of the miracle. Because if he wasn't a people pleaser, he wouldn't have helped the Jews fight against Haman. The only reason why he was willing to take the side of Esther and everybody is because he was a people pleaser. That was the whole. In other words, he needed to service the people. You went and you asked these kind of people, insecure. You went and don't ask them for something, I'll do it. So on the one hand, and that's why he's talking out of two sides of his mouth the whole time. On the one hand, every time Haman came to him, he said, okay, I'll do it your way. And then every time Esther came to him, he said, okay, we'll do it your way. Right? Mm-hmm. So this is, by the way, a big lesson for us, because people think, I'll tell you something I learned the hard way. The people think that if you want to be successful, whatever field you know you go into, but if you're in a people-oriented field, you know, which I'm going to guess most of you will end up in people-oriented fields.
Like, how do people not like end up in people-oriented?
Hmm?
Like, how people like a lot of things are people-oriented fields.
No, as opposed to a computer programmer. Let's say, which just deals with a computer. You know. But if you're a teacher, or if you're a lawyer, if you're a doctor, and you're a rabbi, you know, you have to deal with people, you know.
Okay.
Which one of you a computer programmer? see, I'm right. But you think that ultimately you got to try to please the people. And if you please the people, you know, like the customer's always right. And if you please the people, so then you'll be successful in your field. The fact of the matter is, it's the most basic ingredient for lack of success is being a people pleaser. Because when you want to please everybody, you end up pleasing nobody. And it's a very serious lesson. Because what happens is, A, you tell everybody, okay, yes, I'll do that for you, I'll take care of it. And then at the end, you can't take care of it. Right. It's better off saying, you know, and then the people get upset with you and they get disappointed. You said to take care of it, you're not taking care of it. You know, but you know, I just said I'll take care of it because I'm a nice guy. I just want to be nice to you. But also, you know, I'm going to try to take care of it. But you're better off saying no. You know, so there's the ultimate. You can't get too no-y. I mean, sometimes some people say no, but they got into the habit of saying no to everything. You know, no. I asked somebody here yesterday something. No. Hey, you know what? I don't want you to do it. No, but what you got to be careful with that. But you can't. This was Ahasuerus's downfall, in a sense. You know that spending billions of dollars, you know, trying to please everybody, and at the end you end up killing people. You know, because you know here his wife's in the other room, Vashti, and the people say, hey, let's see your wife, you know, without any clothes on. You know, let's see your wife. Everybody's half drunk, and so he says, okay, come on out. Like, people pleaser. Like, he's gonna go and sacrifice his wife, the dignity of his wife, the dignity of the kingdom. I mean, when you think about it, it's like a wild story, right? Like a crazy story, like this drunken bar story, you know, this crazy story that's happened in some place in downtown Manhattan, you know, like in some gory place here. Crazy. This is the Persian Empire, you know. So she doesn't want to come out. Okay, kill her. You know. So the Gemara says he was so upset afterwards that he killed her. It sounds right in the Megillah. It says, Zohar is Vashti. He remembered Vashti, my wife, and this was his yichus. And this was, he was so upset that he killed her. But like, yeah. So she wasn't the one that was demanding to be pleased at that moment. It was these other guys over here. So in some cases, he's pleasing them. You become a b'shigana. You hurt people. You end up not pleasing people. You end up hurting people. It's just, I think it's a tremendous lesson.
What they say about Sadiq, say, promise little and do much.
Right. They promise little and they do much. They say little and they do much. And then other people
Palmas
say a lot.
Say a lot, and they do very, even a little they don't do.
Yeah.
Says so that's the difference between say Abraham said a little and did a lot. He said, let me bring the guests. He said, let me bring you a little bit of water, right, to wash your feet. And then he runs, Galabakar, that's Abraham, and he goes and he just starts slaughtering cows and making cheese and butter, you know. He said, I'm going to bring you a little bit of water. That's the way to do it. Another guy says, whoa, you're here, I'm going to bring you a feast. And he comes out with a cup of water. So I just want to tell you something about the other way, just while we're on the subject. The other way is also not good. You know, you got to find balance in this world.
Mm.
I was on sitting with, I was good friends with Shlomo Kalbach.
Oh, wow.
Good friends. So, come to the house all the time and talk. So he had a tremendous effect on many people, I mean, like really thousands of people. So I said to him, like, what's the trick? Give me a trick. How do you affect thousands of people? So he said to me, he said, he says he got no out of his vocabulary. Never says the word no.
Oh, really?
No no's in his vocabulary. Tremendous idea. So I said, what do you mean? I'll give you an example. He says somebody comes, he gets calls from all over the place, they hear this Michigan rabbi, like a hippie rabbi, and they'll ask him things they won't ask any other rabbi.
Yeah.
So he said,
he's a Holocaust survivor, right?
He's not a survivor, I don't think. But he's from Vienna, born during the war. I don't know if he was in the Holocaust, but he said somebody called him and said, Rabbi, we hear you're like a cool rabbi, a singer and thing. Do you officiate intermarriages? Will you marry us? It's an intermarriage, Catholic and a Jew. So he said, come, let's talk. So he says, every rabbi in the world will say, no, the chutzpah, ask me to officiate an intermarriage. So he says, okay, so you say no, you made your point, and they hang up the phone, and that's the last you see of him. He says, come talk. So he says the people come and they talk, and he says I want to talk to you separately and to you separately. He talks to the guy and he says to him, you should really be marrying a Jew. You have a real Jewish wedding and you want your kids will be Jewish. And he talks to the non-Jew and he says to the non-Jew, he says, this is not really compatible. Jews, you scratch a Jew and you get a. So he says, don't say no. You get so he gave me like 10 examples of how everybody else would say no, but he didn't say no.
Wow.
So you can't become a naysayer either, right? That's also not good. The whole very difficult trick, but I'm off the play page. I'm just saying it's an important thing to learn, how to balance the yeses and the.
Very tough
because psychologically, but this is the Achashverosh story, because psychologically we want to please. You got to watch this with your wives too. You think it's like, you sometimes you want to please so much, you end up disappointing. And it's better to say, to have the secure position of saying, look, I'm going to really try hard to do that, but I don't think it'll be able to. Not no, not yes. Like you said it so good. Like tzaddikim, say a little bit and do a lot. Main thing is what you do. Okay. Now, what did I want to bring out? So, the first part of the story of the Purim story, according to the first opinion, which is Remeir, is extremely important because of Achashverosh from the first part of the story, meaning where he made the feast, he invited everybody, and he gave everybody wine, everything. From here, you see that he had this need to please, and this was a gift from Shemayim to the Jewish people that he needed to please, because that's why we were able to manipulate him so well. and because, you're not pleasing me. you're going to have to, That's the other thing. People take advantage of people pleasers. I remember the guy who's, my son ended up marrying his daughter. So he's a huge Talmud Chacham. A huge Talmud Chacham, one of the biggest scholars I ever met, actually, Rabbi Auerbach. My son's father,
I'm Mechutin.
So I used to play before we had kids. I used to play ping pong with him. So he was a real smart guy. So he I have a hard time. I'm good at it, but I had a hard time with like this shot, this backhand shot. I couldn't do. He caught it in about a minute. He figured out that I had a hard time every single ball. every single one, right? He figured out the weakness. Yeah. So a person is a pleaser. You got a serious weakness on your hand. And if you have a serious weakness on your hand, you'll see everybody around you. We'll figure out. Oh, all I have to do is tell him that he's not pleasing me, and then he'll go ahead and do whatever I want.
Yeah. So, you know, now I know what Rabbi's doing if he comes.
Play ping pong. This is when we were here, and there used to be, believe it or not, in Toror, it was a whole room of ping pong tables.
Really?
Wow. In the good old days.
Good relaxation.
Okay. Rabbi Yehuda says that's not where the story begins. The story begins with the story of Mordechai. Ish Yehudi Hayav Shushan Abir. Okay, that's kind of good. And then there's another opinion. Rabbi Yossi says, Me'achar Hadvar Me'el. It doesn't even start with Mordechai. It starts really a little bit earlier, in the beginning of chapter 2, where it says that Achashverosh decided that he wanted to get married again. He said, this is the pasuk I was telling you. And after these things, okay, the whole story of the meal and everything, when the wrath of King Achashverosh subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. This is another amazing thing. Vilna Gaon points this out. Says that as long as Achashverosh was mad, as 180 days, as long as Achashverosh was in anger, he forgot Vashti. Didn't mean anything. He killed her. It was only after his anger subsided. What did I do? I killed my wife. Like, you know, this is I killed my wife, you know, and I'm not married. I need a wife.
Oh,
and I need a
queen.
So it's just such an interesting thing that when a person is angry, like your brain doesn't work. You know, everybody always says that, but it's really true.
Yeah.
You know, if you feel yourself angry,
you shut off. I shut off. I don't get stopped.
You make very bad decisions when you're angry. I see it a lot. I see people that are angry, not just the obviously bad decisions, like, you know, like taking revenge and doing stuff like that, or quitting their jobs, or I don't even mean that. That's like obvious, but I mean their whole judgment. What is going on?
Maybe
teach. What happened to me last night? I hear this explosion. I got back from here. I hear this explosion like in my backyard. You know where I live? You're in my house? Like,
right.
Up valley,
the
valley.
Yeah. In the sort of a veil. Yeah, I look up the balcony. I go outside the balcony. I take a look. So, but a real explosion. It wasn't like a. So I couldn't figure out what it was. You know where the Holy Land Hotel is? It's right out my back.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Holy Land Hotel. So I go outside and I go around the back, one of my daughters. I thought it was in a movie. I see maybe 100 army vehicles and guys like with their guns, you know, like this, walking through the street like this with all kinds of gear on, walking through the street. And I start walking over there. He says to me, you know, get back. And then there's all kinds of these, ambulances. And then there's a guy on the side. This is like really cool. He's got a van open. He opens up his army van, and he's giving everybody like bagels and stuff. So figured this out. Like, what is going on over here? So, and then another explosion. So I finally, the manager of the Holy Land Hotel, is a friend of mine. So he's standing outside over there. You know, he's standing there looking at this. I said, why is everybody so cowed when the whole Israeli army is over here running around with machine guns? So he says, no, it's an exercise.
Oh.
So what happened is part of the Holy Land Hotel, they blew up the building on purpose. It was a building that had to come down.
Oh, wow.
And it's a certain kind of building, the same kind of buildings that they have built like in the 1940s. So it's a certain kind of building that they have in a lot of the Arab towns.
Oh,
so they came to learn how to blow up this kind of a building.
That's great.
Yeah. So I said, what's so hard about blowing up this kind of a building? So he explained to me, and then he introduced me to the, whatever he was, the officer there. So he says, I said, what's so hard about blowing up this kind of a building? So he says to me, the hard part, this is such a Jewish thing. He says to me, you can blow up a building, any building, in a minute. He says, the trick is to blow up only the part of the building that you want to blow up because there's somebody in there you don't want. You want to blow up his part of the building. There's a terrorist. They say always blow up these terrorist houses, right?
Right.
Terrorists don't live in a house. They live in an apartment building.
Right.
So they figure out how to blow up just that apartment, right?
Wow.
So and it's got to, so it's a whole art to learn how to blow up this without blowing up that. So they're blowing up this apartment and that apartment,
wow,
and smoke. And then there's planes started going overhead.
Wow.
So I said, you know, they're not going to blow this up in the air. So he says, yeah, they don't actually throw the bomb because they might miss. I said, okay, that's nice, you know, just standing right there, you know. But they target it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they target it on their radar and they throw like a fake bomb. They can simulate it as if a bomb fell on it, even if the bomb didn't fall on. So they were actually bombing this building in my backyard. That was nice.
Wow.
You could, like, write, like, the all-time greatest book in, like, the world.
This is,
like, everything
like
that happens,
so
you could, like, write, like, the, like, the story of my, you know.
Yeah.
Journeys with my neighbor, you know.
No, the reason I tell you these stories is because I forget them the next day. But this is, like,
we're still playing that one story,
the kidnapping. The
kidnapping.
So
we'll get there. We'll get there. For him.
Get there. For him. No, no, wait, but he's doing that because we forget it.
Barranquilla, Colombia, I was
with. Was it you or
it was him.
Son?
It was you, right?
Was
he.
I was in Barranquilla. Okay.
So you're talking about the revenge, like, it's not the usual revenge madness, like,
Right, I'm saying that if a person is in anger, that's all. I'm just saying a person in anger, your judgment is off on almost every subject. You wear the wrong things. You come to the wrong conclusions about things. In other words, not that like, well, I'm angry at you, God forbid, and therefore I'm going to do something to hurt you or something like that, or do that. No. When I'm angry, like, all of my brain is like retarded. When a person gets angry, you become like, but it's not like you think you're okay. It's not like, you know, like you've been drinking, so you realize you're a little bit dizzy. You think you're okay. In fact, people think that they're even sharper when they're angry.
Really?
Yeah, they think they're like, now I see it, and I'm saying what I want to say, and I'm doing what I want to do. But the fact is, that you're making all the wrong decisions. It's a very bad state of mind to be in. So the Gemara happens to say this by Achashverosh, that the whole 180 days, he didn't even realize he killed his wife. That's how, because he was angry at her for not coming out naked and dancing on the table. And it embarrassed him. Why did it embarrass him? Because here he wanted to please all the people. And he wanted to show that he's a king even though he's not a king, etc., etc., etc. So, okay. Let me get through what I want to say here.
Not now.
Hmm?
You had to go to the funeral, right?
You had to go what?
The funeral.
What?
He's the king, man. He's the king, you know. He's the king. He's the king. He's the king.
What do you think? Oh, like,
no.
Like the British, Princess Diana over here?
No.
I don't know. People were animals, like Saddam Hussein, you know, when your eyes be shot.
Yeah. They moved the capital. Move the capital. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Someone crazy never would capital.
Total self serving.
Yeah.
Okay, let me say this. We've got 5 minutes. Let me just say this halachic point here. Time flies when you have fun. Let me make a halachic point over here. Have all these different opinions. I only read you a couple of them as to where you have to start the Megillah and where you end the Megillah. Right? Now, you don't have this anywhere else. In other words, there's four Megillahs. There's a Megillah you read on Shavuos. There's a Megillah you read. There's other Megillahs, right? That you read.
Right.
Megillah Zeicha you read on Tisha B'Av. Nobody asks where do you start or where do you finish. You read the Megillah, and that's all, right? So why over here is there an issue as to where you have to read the Megillah? So now I'm going to tell you the thing that I never understood before, now I understand it. That if you look carefully in the book here, let's see if I can find it here. Esther, let's see where it is here, at the end, let's move all the way to the end. Esther at the end of this whole story, right here, hold on, give me Esther at the whole end says that she wants to be she wants the story of the Megillah. I'm just looking for the pasuk. Esther wrote a letter, she wrote this Megillah, and she wrote a letter to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, and she said, Kisvuni Ladoros. I want this to be like a national holiday. I want this to be written up as a Megillah, as something that gets written, read every single year. That's what she said, Kisvuni Ladoros, right? And then she said, a second time, she said, Kavuni Ladoros, right? So, it seems to be that Brisker Rav points out that there were two stages in this, and therefore two mitzvahs. When Esther asked, this is like real important understanding of the halachas of this thing. Esther and Mordechai went through this whole story of the Megillah. They got saved, they saved the Jews of Persia, they were excited. They said, let this be something that every year on Purim, the Jews, wherever they are, read the story in a Megillah, right? So that was her first request. Her second request was, after they said yes, she said, Kivuni Ladoros, that she wants the book of Esther that they have now to be canonized and become part of the Kisvei HaKodesh. In other words, you see, there was two steps to what happened over here. Kisvuni Ladoros and Kivuni Ladoros. With me? First thing is, let everybody read the story. Doesn't mean that you're reading it from Holy Writ. And then there's another thing is that she wanted that, which was a tremendously huge request to ask, is she wanted this story, Esther, she wanted this story that she just went through to be part of the Tanakh, to be part of the Bible. That was a whole different request. In order to be part of the Bible, it had to be rewritten by the men of the Great Assembly. Because you see that the book of Yechezkel, we're talking about outside a little bit, the book of Yechezkel and the book of Daniel, Yechezkel was written in Chutz Laaretz. That's the whole thing, that Yechezkel led the Jews out of Israel after the first destruction of the first temple, right? Mm-hmm. And then he wrote the book of Yechezkel, which is a fascinating book. It couldn't be part of the Tanakh until he sent it back to Jerusalem. Until the time of the Second Temple, it wasn't part of the Tanakh. There was a whole period in there where the book of Ezekiel was not part of the Tanakh. Why? Because it has to be re-canonized by the men of the Great Assembly. Wow. The Anshei Knesset HaGdola and the Beis Din HaGadol, the big Beis Din that sat in Yerushalayim by the Kosel, if they didn't make it as part of it, part of the Tanakh, it wasn't part of the Tanakh. So that's why Esther said, do two things for me. First thing is, Kivuni Ladoros, let's make this a holiday where everybody runs around and everybody puts on masquerades and everybody reads the Megillah. Very nice. Second thing is, make it into Holy Writ. Make it into Kisvei HaKodesh, so that has a whole different halacha. You keep it down in the Aron Kodesh, so there's a whole different halacha. So what I was thinking was that her first request of... When we read the Megillah today, it's different than when you read the other Megillahs. When you read the other Megillahs, like you read Eicha on Tisha B'Av, you're reading Eicha on Tisha B'Av because that's the part of Tanakh that's appropriate to Tisha B'Av. So you read it just like you read the Parsha of the week, because that's the part of the Parsha, part of the Torah which is appropriate to that week. And that's why you read the Haftorah, because the Haftorah is appropriate to the Parsha. When you read the book of Esther, it's not because it's the part of the Tanakh that was appropriate. There was a mitzvah to read the book of Esther even before it was part of the Tanakh. You see what I'm saying? So just read it to remember the miracle. That's all she wanted. Remember the miracle. So therefore, the Rabbanim and the Gemara had a question. Well, how much of it do we need to read? Should we start from here? Should we start from here? Or should we start from here? This you don't have. Once it was canonized, then that would have been a different question. You read Megillah's Esther, but this is a pre-canonization question. Now, even after it was canonized, you understand the mechanics of this? Now, even after it was canonized, it's not really, you're not reading it because it's part of the Tanakh. It happens to be that it's part of the Tanakh. But that's not why you're reading it. You're not reading it because it's part of the Tanakh. This is Brisker Rosa. So therefore, it makes sense that you had all these different opinions as to where you should start and where you should finish. Halachically, that makes a very big difference, because that's why, on the one hand, like, there's like a mitzvah, like people try to get their own Megillah to read from. Like, why is that? What's up with that? Like, you don't find people like bring their own Torah to show and follow along. You imagine? Like, everybody, well, I got my own Torah. I don't need, like, what? You know, or like when you read the Maftir or Eicha or anything, you know, nobody brings their own. You know, you just get a thing like this and you follow along, right? So why in Megillah Esther all of a sudden everybody brings their own Megillah? Why is that?
Flamboyancy.
Yeah, but why Dafka Megillah Esther?
I mean, you dress up and everything. You dress up, you do all these other
things. It just costs like $800, so what? Like,
buy the Torah.
Right. No, but why Megillah more than their own Sefer Torah? So the answer is that they're because it's Pirsumei Nisa. The whole point is to publicize the miracle. And you're publicizing the miracle. That's what you mean by flamboyant, probably. Is you're publicizing the miracle more. Everybody, you're doing what Esther said to do. Take a letter-like thing and read it. By the way, even if you don't have a kosher Megillah, it's a nice thing to do even out of a non-kosher Megillah, even out of a paper Megillah, because the whole thing is like, we're doing something special because Esther did it. Not, whereas if it would be, like, because it's part of Tanakh, then we have one, and one person reads it, and everybody follows along. Okay, just stop talking here. We'll take a little break, and then we'll talk more.